33,000 who have served with distinction as members of this court's bar, serving the members of the armed forces. We note that this group in particular, from Walter Reed, assists those who serve those wounded in war, and we particularly appreciate your service. Thank you. We now turn to the first case this morning, United States against Efayoumi, counsel for the defense.
May it please the court, I am Frank Spinner, and together with Major Mangan, we represent Sergeant Efayoumi in this case. Sergeant Efayoumi was convicted by a general court martial in the Army of forcible sodomy and various allegations of indecent assault. The issue that's been granted review by this court has to do with the abuse of discretion by the military judge in denying a challenge for cause against one of the court members of Major Cutting. It is appellant's position that by failing to articulate on the record or even address the issue of implied bias, that the judges, that the standard that applies in this instance is a less deferent standard in terms of applying the abuse of discretion. This was an offense that involved male-on-male acts, and at the heart of the case were questions about homosexuality, and these questions were addressed at some length during the general voir dire, as well as in the individual voir dire of particular members.
Was that the focus of counsel at the lower level at the trial?
Yes, sir.
Was on the homosexuality and not on the discharge and not on the pornography?
They addressed all of those. I mean, they were interrelated. I think the point here that I want to make coming in, and it may not be entirely clear from my brief, is that there were, I think, three key points in Major Gutting's responses that were a concern to the defense. In part, it was the strong objection to homosexuality based on religious and moral beliefs. Secondarily, there was the conclusion or the opinion expressed by Major Gutting that anyone who possesses pornography is immoral. And as you looked at these various responses that Major Gutting made, whereas some of the other court members expressed similar views, Major Gutting was the only one who expressed the strong view about pornography. Now, that pornography was not in any way connected to homosexual pornography or particular type of pornography. So when Major Gutting responded on that point, he was the only court member who responded that he had a moral objection on pornography grounds, to the extent that he had the opinion that if a person simply possessed pornography without further distinction, that they are immoral. And I think that really goes to the heart of the problem in terms of bias and prejudice. Clearly, Major Gutting had a bias going in to this court martial, and he did not back off of that bias. Now, they did address how this bias might play out with respect to the issue of discharge, and particularly sentencing with respect to a punitive discharge. And Major Gutting did indicate that he would have a very hard time considering retention for someone if they in fact were convicted. I think the judge asked a sort of perfunctory question, can you keep an open mind and consider discharge? And Major Gunning said yes. However, the defense counsel, in arguing the challenge for cause, pointed out the demeanor, his demeanor when he responded, and that he was very hesitant. The judge really didn't address that in making his ruling, whether or not Major Gutting was hesitant when he did agree to what the judge's attempt to what I would call rehabilitate this particular court member. And you'll see that discussion or dialogue concerning being hesitant can be found on page 392 and 393 of the record. As you look at the opinions that this court has rendered in this area, I think the court has expressed a concern about the fact that a military judge needs to...
Well, when you say 392 and 393, maybe I have the wrong record here. Isn't that the argument of the parties?
Right, that's...
So if you're trying to say the member had some hesitation, shouldn't you be arguing what he actually said rather than what the counsel said?
Well, the...
Where in the member's responses is your concern reflected?
Okay.
As opposed to in the defense counsel's arguments, which...
Well, it's in the argument, but it is describing how he behaved on the stand. The member doesn't say, I'm being hesitant at this time, and maybe if I'm understanding the question, Your Honor. The only way that we know that the member may have been hesitant is through the trial.
So your case is based on demeanor.
No, it's not based on demeanor, but demeanor...
If it's not based on demeanor, then where in the text of his answers is your concern reflected?
In the text of... the concern is reflected on the individual statements that he made in response to the question...
To the judge?
To the judge.
So on...
And to defense counsel, Your Honor. So I'm referring specifically... at page 316 in the record, several of the members indicated they had a strong religious or other objection to homosexuality. That was during general voir dire. All of the members, which presumably includes Major Gutting, indicated that homosexuals should not be allowed to serve in the military. That's also at page 316 in the record. Then when he was questioned, when Major Gutting was questioned individually by the military judge, in the record at 354 and 355, that's where Major Gutting said that regarding homosexuality, I feel that it is morally wrong. It is against what I believe is Christian, and I do have some strong opinions against it.
And you don't think that the military judge adequately tested his... this is a question. You don't think the judge military adequately tested that?
No, I do not.
And in effect, rehabilitated the member.
I do not think he adequately addressed that, Your Honor. And I also think that.
So, do you think, with your moral beliefs, that you can fairly evaluate the evidence of this case, given the nature of the allegations? Yes, sir. Well, how do we? Now we're back to demeanor. Is that what you're arguing?
Well, and demeanor is a factor, I think, even in implied bias cases, Your Honor. It is a primary factor, I think, in actual bias. It is still a factor, even in implied bias.
Counsel.
And what the judge failed to address was the member's demeanor when he responded to these questions. And so that's what the defense counsel was attempting to do at 392, was put on the record that, well, yes, Judge, you tried to rehabilitate him, but he was hesitant in his response.
And so for purposes of analyzing this record, do we take it that... the witness or the member was in fact hesitant, or is it simply a factor to be considered with respect to any deficiency in the military judge's findings?
It's a factor to be considered with respect to the sufficiency of the military judge's findings.
Okay. How do you deal with the judge saying at 392, well, from observing the demeanor of the witness and the fact that he appeared, whatever he said, the fact that he appeared to be able to follow my instructions, I'm going to conclude that when he said he could consider no discharge, he could consider no discharge. My question is not whether you're right or you're wrong, but how do we determine that the judge has it wrong if the judge says on the record he has looked at the demeanor?
Well, I guess, again, we get into that distinction between actual bias and implied bias. In actual bias, and the judge is making those comments, he was addressing actual bias. The judge at no point addressed implied bias and what factors he considered in ruling on implied bias. In fact, he made no comment at all on implied bias. So what I think we're left with on the record is the judge is analyzing this legal problem based on actual bias.
So now, that goes to, you're arguing less deference given to him because he didn't put his implied bias of any analysis on the record.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's where I think this court
but
is.
But you're not arguing that he didn't consider demeanor in some manner, are you?
No, I'm not. I think
we put more of an onus on defense counsel. We have case after case come up here where military judges have not put the implied bias analysis on the record. It's odd to me that they have not. They've been invited to. Why shouldn't we put more of an onus on defense counsel to affirmatively raise the issue? The goal here is a fair trial, and if the way to get a fair trial is to make sure all the issues are debated and factually played out before the military judge, if judges are just not doing it, why shouldn't we say, okay, defense counsel, if you want to argue this on appeal, put it on the record below? You see my point?
No, I see your point.
Because the second layer of appellate review is an odd place to reconstruct voir dire. Starting at the end to go back to the beginning.
You make a valid point, Your Honor. And this court does have the power to hold defense attorneys' feet to the fire in that respect.
I'm looking for pros and cons, though. It's your chance to give me the pros and cons of why we should or should not.
But ultimately, I think particularly from a public perception standpoint, it really falls upon the judge to make sure not only that a trial is fair in reality, but it's fair in appearance as well.
But wouldn't the public have more confidence if an implied bias challenge were played out with the facts put on the record? I mean, they may have less confidence depending on what the facts are, but...
And I think that's where sometimes you get on a case-by-case analysis. I mean, you know, we're not arguing for any new law here.
No, but I'm asking you whether we should
right.
put more onus on defense counsel.
This is well, as a defense
question.
Counsel...
I'm not asking you to win or lose your case right now. I'm just asking as a matter of... legal policy, would it be better to not, instead of just saying, okay, judge, it's all up to you, and you get less deference if you don't do it, why not say, hey, defense counsel, it's up to you, too?
Right. Part of me responds as someone who's been practicing in the military system for 30 years, that oftentimes you have a lot of green defense counsel who are relatively inexperienced. On the other hand, your judges are lieutenant colonels and colonels who presumably regularly read the opinions of this court, and this court has repeatedly said judges apply the liberal grant mandate. And so I think certainly judges are on notice, and I tend to be more forgiving of green defense counsel since I tend to work with them quite a bit and oftentimes pick up their cases as an appellate defense counsel. As the law has progressed in this area, I remember as a major working in Air Force Appellate Defense that we were never getting...
Are you sort of using this time to think of your answer?
Well, I am opposed to adding a burden to what I consider inexperienced defense counsel. And I think in terms of being in a position...
So your argument is you're concerned that in some way they'll waive or forfeit, depending whatever the term is, through inexperience rather than through choice.
It will be ineffective.
Thank you.
And I think the judges, I guess what I'm saying is the judges are in a best position to preserve the appearance within the system. Experienced judges who read the opinions of this court. And this court, I think, has spoken relatively clearly in this area. I guess
with respect to pornography, is a moral objection based on religion to pornography a per se disqualification for sitting on a court-martial? No.
No, sir.
And is a moral objection to homosexuality based on religion a per se disqualification?
No, sir.
Okay. So what was it that the military judge should have done in this case that he didn't do? I understand your answer. He should have put something on the record. What should have been done with respect to both of those issues? What questions should have been asked?
Well, I think you should have granted the challenge, quite frankly, because
I understand that, but
right.
Sure. That's contradictory to your answer per se disqualification. So, what questions should he have asked here?
No, I mean that's a little facetious. Not to admit that, Your Honor, but here's the problem: what I would call the big picture view, and there's almost a subtle unlawful command influence or army policy undercurrent in this case because of homosexuality. I mean, all the members are saying
UCI, you got a statute that says homosexuality is incompatible with military service. The statute doesn't make it an offense, but the statute declares as a matter of public policy that it's incompatible. How does that constitute UCI?
No, well, because Nonetheless, a court member, when they're asked to be considered as a court member, can express a personal view as to whether they disagree with that policy. And in this case, no member expressed a personal view that they disagreed with that policy. And it's a very fine line, in my opinion, between saying someone should not be retained and can be discharged administratively, and someone should be given a punitive discharge based on some homosexual status or behavior.
I understand your argument about the liberal grant mandate, but what I'm wondering is how you square that with the other doctrine, which is an implied bias should be invoked sparingly and rarely. I mean, what makes this the exceptional case?
I think the homosexual aspect of it, Your Honor, and my time has expired.
You may take the time you need to answer Judge Ryan's question.
Right. I think that I think in this. Could you restate the question again? I'll make sure I answer it.
Well, on the one hand, there's the liberal grant mandate.
Right.
But when it comes to implied bias, there's also the notion that that's something that will be invoked sparingly, rarely. And my question to you is, what makes this the exceptional case?
I think the homosexual undercurrents in this case that exist make this the rare case. In fact,
how many members expressed concern about homosexuality?
Well, there were, in our brief, we note the number of members on each of the questions, Your Honor.
Somewhere in the briefs, I can't remember whom, it said 6 out of 9.
Right.
Why didn't the defense counsel try to remove 6 out of the 9 for cause?
Because Major Gutting went on to be the only one to express that someone who possessed pornography was immoral.
The issue homosexuality or pornography?
Well, it's a combination.
I know there can be a link, but...
Right. It's a combination. It wasn't clarified whether they were talking about homosexual pornography or any pornography, so it's a cumulative impact of all the answers. And through the course of the questioning, Major Gutting distinguished himself from the others.
I stole Judge Ryan's question, so...
Well, I would say there's no case. I haven't seen a case. The government tried to cite Brown, but I don't think Brown is on point with respect to this issue. There is no case in military law that specifically addresses this type of challenge for cause in this context.
Well, on rebuttal, because I see that you, because of my question, you are running over. But on rebuttal, why don't you express what the limits to this would be? Would it be that every time, and I'm not asking you to answer the question now, but I want you to think about it, would it be whenever there is a homosexual aspect to a case that any member that expresses any concerns about that should be removed for implied bias? Or, you know, what would the limits be? Because I'm not sure that I see the logical limit if we adopted the position that you're asking us to. Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Counsel, while you're working on your homework assignments for rebuttal, I'd like you to answer on rebuttal the question that I had asked earlier, which you had started to answer, and that is, based on your response, that a strong view based on religion as to either pornography or homosexuality is not per se disqualifying, what questions should the military judge have asked in this case? That's something you can address on rebuttal, and we'll give you ample time to do that. Thank you. Counsel for the government.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Captain Michael Pond, and along with Colonel John Miller, I represent the United States. This was a case about appellant's crimes of violence, not his sexual orientation. Major Gutting understood that, readily assumed that, and said nothing which would lead a reasonable person to believe otherwise. His initial hesitation to consider retaining an NCO who forcibly sodomized a young soldier was understandable. It would not cause a reasonable person to question the fairness of these proceedings, but considered in the context of the entire record, including his subsequent and repeated promises to consider the full range of punishments. Accordingly, appellant was not deprived of his right to a fair and impartial panel, and his court should affirm the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals. Briefly turn to the standard review. This court reviews a military judge's ruling on a challenge for cause for an abuse of discretion. Because questions of implied bias are reviewed objectively through the eyes of the public, this court affords somewhat less deference when analyzing a ruling for implied bias. Furthermore, the government agrees that a military judge who addresses implied bias on the record will receive more deference than one who does not. There are 2 points which are worth mentioning in this context. In this case, the court should afford some deference, some measure of deference, to the military judge's ruling. Although he did not cite the liberal grant mandate in his ruling on Major Gutting's challenge, he was clearly aware of the doctrine because he cited it in his ruling on Major Kohler. That's the record at page 393. Going to Judge Baker's question about why, given this court's jurisprudence over the last few years on this issue, the military judge was not addressing this issue, it's worth noting that this case occurred in 2001, and this court first explicitly encouraged military judges to discuss the liberal grant mandate on the record in the United States v. Downing.
The real issue is implied bias.
That's correct.
Right, okay. Sorry, go ahead.
But again,
I didn't want you to lose that phrase as well.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
If you trace the citations back on that proposition, it goes back to Downing, which is a 2002 case, which was decided after this court martial had adjourned. So that might shed some light on the military judges, the absence of that discussion in this case. The liberal grant mandate is a tipping standard. It is applied in close cases. This was not a close case. And this court's decision in the United States v. Clay is helpful in understanding why. Clay involved a senior panel member who stated that because he had daughters, he would be merciless within the limit of the law in a rape case. And he returned again and again to that theme, despite the trial counsel's attempt to rehabilitate him. Now, that panel member's belief bore directly on his ability to follow the military judge's instructions and consider the full range of punishments. And this court, in analyzing that case, although it stated that it was a close case, this court found implied bias based on essentially three factors, all of which are absent in this case. First, the emotional content of that panel member's responses. Second, the tenacity with which he maintained them. And third, the fact that they bore directly on a central issue in that case. None of those factors which supported this court's decision in Clay are present here. First, in contrast to Clay, Major Gutting's religious beliefs were at best tangentially related to the issues presented in this case. His objection was not to assault or even to homosexual assault, but to consensual homosexual acts. This was not a case about consensual homosexual acts. That's an important distinction.
Well, where in the record do you find that distinction made? I thought the questions were about homosexual conduct. And are you arguing that because it may be forcible homosexual conduct, that a person's feelings about consensual homosexual conduct aren't important?
This court in Brown, Your Honor, recognized the essential distinction between a member's views on consensual homosexual conduct and a case involving a forcible sexual assault. And that's a distinction which applies equally, although in this case is a mirror image of Brown in a sense. In that case, which is 34 MJ 107, the accused was a male soldier charged with committing consensual sodomy with another male soldier. The defense challenged a panel member whose 7-year-old son had been the victim of a homosexual assault and just 2 years prior to the case. The military judge denied the defense's challenge for cause based on implied bias. And in doing so, he focused on the difference between the charged offense, which involved a consensual homosexual act, and the panel member's personal experience, which involved a crime of violence. And that same distinction exists in this case. Major Gutting's beliefs...
In that, just to interrupt quickly, in that case, my recollection is that the rationale and the analysis of what happened was spread on the record as opposed to this case. And that is, there's no discussion by the military judge of the factors related to implied bias.
Well,
in other words, the judge gave his rationale in that case for dealing with implied bias at 34 MJ, and we don't have that here. He looked at the specific factors that went on to distinguish what the member went through and the charged offense, and we don't have that here. We don't have any analysis of what strong religious beliefs mean with respect to this member, do we?
That may be true, Your Honor, but again, I think that the essential point of Brown is that regardless of whether it was discussed or not, the question is, was the challenge properly denied? in this case, Major Gutting's responses, again, bore on the issue of homosexuality, sexual conduct, not on the offense as such.
Well, counsel, if I can follow up on that again, I'm still having trouble with that line of reasoning. Major Gutting said that he thought that homosexuality was morally wrong. And here we have a situation where an individual has been accused of forcible sodomy, which male on male is homosexual conduct. Why does that take it? I mean, how can you make the distinction between consensual homosexuality is somehow morally wrong, but forcible homosexuality makes it okay? I don't understand that.
How can you make the distinction, Your Honor, between...
It seems to me that you're arguing that in his responses to the questions, Major Gutting was responding that he was morally, he thought that consensual homosexual conduct was morally wrong. And you said that's not the case here, this is forcible sodomy. I don't see that distinction at all. Where do you get that distinction? Why would a forcible homosexual act be any less morally wrong than a consensual one? Or is that not your argument? Am I missing your argument?
His contention was that homosexual conduct is morally wrong. That was based on his religion. That flowed from his Christian beliefs.
And would forcible sodomy in this case be homosexual conduct?
It would, Your Honor.
Okay. So then would he believe that that conduct was morally wrong?
He would believe that the conduct was morally wrong because it was a crime.
No, you just said that he believed it was morally wrong because of his religion.
That wasn't the question that he was asked to assess in this case, Your Honor. He was asked to sit on a panel and answer the question as to whether these acts did or did not occur. Now, he may well, after hearing the evidence, as a kind of secondary fact, conclude that the appellant may or may not be homosexual, but not every person who commits forcible male-on-male assaults is a homosexual. You know, that conclusion would come after he had either made a decision that the accused was...
Let's stipulate that he thought homosexuality was morally wrong and rape was morally wrong. Why should he have sat on this case?
Well, mere distaste for certain offenses is not per se disqualifying, Your Honor. The law requires more. In this case, his responses lacked the emotionality that was present in Clay.
You're back to your three Clay factors.
Sir. And in this case, Major Gutting did not state that he disliked homosexuals. He did not believe homosexuals were any more likely to commit sexual crimes than heterosexuals.
By arguing that, are you presuming, or is the flip side of that argument that if he had, you believe that he should have been excused?
That's in the record, Your Honor.
No, I'm asking you, by arguing the flip side, are you implicitly arguing that had he expressed those things, he should have been excused?
Yes, we are, actually, Your Honor, because that would have been a much closer case, because if he had gotten up there and said, I believe that homosexuals are more aggressive than heterosexuals, I believe that homosexuals are more likely to commit sexual crimes than heterosexuals, that would have borne directly on the issue in the case. It's really no different than saying it is acceptable for a panel member to state, I respect law enforcement. It is not acceptable for the state, I believe law enforcement officers more than the defense witnesses. That shows bias. And I think if he had stated some kind of particularized stereotypical belief, that would have been a much closer case, perhaps justifying the imposition of the liberal grant mandate. But as it is, all we have here is his religious belief, which without any kind of accompanying prejudice, and that's the key link that's missing in this case.
Should we give the military judge's decision any deference in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why should we?
Because...
this is an implied bias challenge. He didn't discuss it on the record. He didn't discuss the liberal grant or the liberal mandate rule. where do you get the argument that we should be giving him deference?
Well, this court has stated that although the level of deference, it's a sliding scale, Your Honor, although it's diminished in this case, it does not mean that the military judge should be afforded no deference.
Well, wouldn't it be a better argument for you to say that on the record of this case, this court need not or should not give the military judge any deference, his opinion any deference, but based upon the facts,
exactly,
we could rule on our own that this was not worthy of challenge.
Perhaps I'm not being myself clear, but even if this court analyzes this case de novo, our position is that the absence of the three factors that this court relied upon in Clay, which was admittedly a closed case. Now, if Clay was a closed case, and if this court's decision rests on those three factors, and those three factors are not present here, then almost ipso facto, then this is not a closed case.
So the three Clay factors have to be in play in all of situations in order for it to be a closed case?
No, but they are relevant in cases involving personal beliefs. There's Clay is the closest case we can find to this kind of case where there's a personal belief by a panel member which is alleged to have rendered him impartial. And in that case, those are the three considerations that this court essentially relied upon. So it's a good analogy for the governor for those reasons. Now, turning
is this
to
an actual bias case masquerading as an implied bias case?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Now, Major Gutting's initial discomfort with the idea of retaining appellant if found guilty stemmed from the seriousness of the charges, not their homosexual nature, and that is evident in the record of page 391. The defense counsel never made the connection between Major Gutting's allegedly inflexible sentencing philosophy and his homosexual beliefs. He articulated two completely separate grounds. He stated, that, again, that's at 391. So, Your Honor, Major Gutting stated in response to your question very clearly that he would have a hard time not considering a discharge in this case. Additionally, he said he believed the person to be immoral merely for the possession of pornographic material. So the homosexuality was a secondary concern to begin with. And it's, again, it's not one that defense counsel, one individual voir dire of Major Gutting, even addressed once. He asked no follow-up questions. While that doesn't waive the issue, it certainly suggests that the homosexual aspect of it did not play as large a role at the trial level as appellant asserts it does now on appeal. But given the serious nature of the charges, there's a few points are in order. Major Gutting's discomfort was hardly surprising and, more importantly, would not strike an objective observer as particularly noteworthy given the serious nature of those charges. As this court stated in the United States v. Harriet, we are reluctant to hold a prospective member who is not evasive and admits to harboring an opinion that many others would share, such as that a convicted drug dealer should not remain a non-commissioned officer, should be separated from the armed services, must automatically be excluded if challenged for cause. So, again, his initial discomfort is not particularly surprising.
Counsel, I want to go back to page 391, where they asked, or I guess your argument is that they were more concerned about him having a hard time and not considering a discharge than they were his homosexual conduct. But when we go back to page 354, in the individual voir dire of Major Gutting, that starts out with the military judge asking him about his strong objections to homosexuality. He says he feels it was morally wrong. It's against what he believes as a Christian, and he does have strong opinions against it. And then as those questions goes on, the last question that the military judge asks, do you think you could honestly consider not discharging the accused, even with that kind of conviction? Isn't the conviction he's talking about his Christian conviction against homosexuality? And isn't the discussion on 391 about not considering a discharge related to the homosexual aspects?
That's not the way we read it, Your Honor. We read conviction as conviction on the charged offenses, not a personal conviction.
You see no relationship there between the discussion on homosexuality and the reluctance to give a discharge?
Again, Your Honor, to the extent that the record is ambiguous on that point, the defense, as the challenging party, bears the responsibility for resolving those kinds of ambiguities. And in this case, the defense counsel did not ask a single question following up to that of Major Getty to clarify that. So,
what case would you cite for the proposition that the defense, as opposed to the military judge, he has the responsibility at this stage of the trial for clearing up the ambiguity?
Well, we would just say cite RCM 912 as the challenging party. I think it's, now, to be fair, I think it's a shared responsibility. The military judge certainly cannot turn a blind eye, especially in close cases. I think as the case becomes closer and approaches the standard, perhaps the obligation of the military judge increases. But again, this was not a close case, nor was it one in which this particular panel member, in contrast to Clay, really persisted in that belief. And again, that's another important fact. In Clay, you had a panel member who was quite recalcitrant and kept coming back again and again and returning to his position. Yes, I will consider the full range of punishments, but rape is about as serious a crime as I can think of. In this case, Major Gunn immediately acquiesced to the instructions of the military judge, and he didn't return to it. Instead, the military judge asked him a few more times just to make sure, and he was unequivocal, and he never really returned to that point. So that's another factor which would cut against the idea that he had some kind of deeply rooted bias based on inflexible sentencing philosophy, Your Honor. And again, you know, when we talk about implied bias, we talk about the objective observer. And the objective observer in this case would have seen that Major Gunning did not need to be convinced. So that's another factor to consider. And again, when we talk about the sincerity of Major Gunning's response, as the military judge, who at the end of the day is the one impartial referee in this case, it's his assessment of sincerity, to the extent that that's factored in and implied bias, which should carry weight with this court, not the arguments of counsel. Of course, defense counsel is going to say he seemed hesitant.
Well, you're correct that it's the military judge's view on implied bias, but here we have no view of the military judge on implied bias.
That's correct, Your Honor, but this court has held that the military judge's subjective assessment of demeanor, sincerity, while that's typically analyzed in actual bias cases, can be a factor, is a factor in implied bias cases for a simple reason, because this notional objective observer who we're concerned with is ostensibly viewing the same things as the military judge is viewing, and presumably would come to the same conclusions if indeed the panel member really was sincere.
So we're substituting the military judge for the impartial observer under the implied bias rule?
No, Your Honor. What we're saying is that if the military judge found the panel member to be credible, then it stands to reason that someone sitting in the courtroom and observing the same things that the military judge did would also find him to be credible. And my time is about to expire.
Counsel, we gave the defense a bit more time, so if you'd like to take time, if there's any critical point you feel you need to make that you didn't have an opportunity to do so, please do so, and then you may conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. An objective observer, considering the totality of Major Gunning's responses, would have harbored no doubts as to his impartiality. Nothing in this record suggests that his private religious views would have affected his deliberations, and he repeatedly affirmed his willingness to consider the full range of punishments. The appellant has failed to demonstrate that Major Gunning's presence would cause a substantial doubt as to the fairness of his court-martial. Accordingly, this court should affirm the decision of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the defense would first address Judge Ryan's question and my question, and then we'll give you an opportunity for rebuttal.
First of all, I'm sorry, just her question first and then yours. With respect to the limits, I want to make clear I'm not asking for any kind of per se rule. But the problem that you get into where the judge has failed to state on the record what the law is on implied bias and then how it applies to this situation, now you're talking about how much deference to give to his denying of the challenge for cause. So in terms of trying to say what the limits are, the limits at some point become a factual question with respect to the individual case. And so in this instance, I'm not asking the court to identify what the limits are with respect to either homosexuality or how members respond, but to simply recognize that there was an abuse of discretion under this less deferent standard where you have a liberal grant mandate given Major Gutting's responses to the questions. So I don't know what the limits are. But I will say in this case, under these facts with these responses, it was an abuse of discretion given the standards established by this court. With respect to the questions that the judge should ask, I think what the judge should have done, and I'll refer specifically to page 355 in the record. I have a problem with judges asking questions that require a yes or no answer, especially if they're in the nature of a leading question. And so the questions I like to use on voir dire are questions like, are you comfortable or are you uncomfortable? Or why you said this before and you say this now, why did you change your answer? Or why do you appear to have changed your answer? So for instance, after Major Gutting had expressed, I would have a hard time, the judge then says in page 355, do you think you could honestly consider not discharging the accused even with that kind of conviction? I would have a hard time with that, sir. Could you consider it, though? Yes, sir. At that point, as a judge, I would have said, well, now you just said you would have a hard time with it. Why are you saying yes, sir? So I would ask why questions following up. The problem, and I think this is a problem from a public perception standpoint as well, is that it looks like the judge is just trying to get yes or no answers and rehabilitate the member so he can sit on the court. At this point, the judge should have made more of an effort to explore why the member thought he could overcome the biases that he's already expressed. Why, Major Gutting, do you feel, after having said that a person who possesses pornography is immoral, why do you feel you can set that opinion aside and fairly hear this case if a member of the public were watching this proceeding? And those are the kinds of questions I think the judge could ask, and that he did not ask, and that he should have asked in this particular case. And I think when we start talking about public perception, and I think some of the trial counsel's arguments slip more into actual bias argument, but when we start talking about public perception, Judge Stuckey, while it may be true that this is law, this is public policy, it's well established, there may be a lot of people in the public who do not agree with that policy and who are concerned with whether or not that policy has had too much influence or impact on court members when they're asked to decide difficult questions of fact that may result in a criminal conviction. And so, at least from my perspective, practicing in courts martial for 30 years, one of the current concerns that you have is especially when you get into areas of homosexuality, are you getting honest answers from court members so that you can make challenges, whether for cause or peremptorily?
How many of the other members went through individual voir dire? Of the six who expressed some personal view about homosexuality, how many went through it?
I think, I'm not sure, Your Honor. I know that Colonel Vaughn did, and I know, in fact, the trial counsel challenged Colonel Vaughn, who called homosexuality an abomination, and I think did disclose an inelastic attitude. Outside of him, I'm not sure that there were any other members that the defense counsel went through this line of inquiry with. And that's why I want to say, What distinguishes Major Gunning was not just his religious views that homosexuality was wrong. Other members expressed that. That wasn't the concern that the defense counsel had. The concern that the defense counsel had was that Major Gunning went on to sort of go out on a limb farther than all the other members by saying that anyone who simply possessed pornography, otherwise undistinguished, homosexual or not, is immoral. That's a bias, and that's a bias he was carrying into the proceeding with him.
Do you think most people think pornography is moral or immoral?
Most people? Based on sales and access to pornography in this country, I would say most people do not.
Most people think it's moral.
It's moral.
Well, counsel, and this is a question that Judge Stuckey asked of the government, but based on your argument, are you making the argument that the military judge erred in not granting his challenge for actual bias?
No. I'm not attempting to make that argument.
Okay.
And my time is up.
You may briefly conclude. Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until 10 minutes before 10 o'clock.
Court stands in recess until 9:50.